Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. My co-host is in the elevator as we speak, but I'm here with our special guest tonight, Mr. Bob Biles. Our studio audience already loves you.
Hi, everybody. How are you?
So, recording engineer extraordinaire. Bob, you're also like a little bit of an inventor of sorts. I've seen you soldering cables.
I've seen you kind of do a lot of things
in the studio.
I'm actually a wiring guy. That's what kept me busy when I first came to L.A. I couldn't find a job at a studio. But I got a job doing wiring for studios. So I was on the crew.
All kinds of cables?
Yeah, well, installing SSL consoles. I was on that crew, and then that turned into other people's. The home studio thing was just happening. And it's, you know, some people take that really seriously, and some people don't. You know what I mean? And it kept me busy. And that started when I was a kid. I couldn't afford the stereo that I wanted, but I could buy it at half price as a kit. So I bought it and put it together.
Wow.
You know, it was Dynaco, which was David Hafler's company out of Philadelphia. And David Hafler went on to make Hafler amplifiers and a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's always kept me busy, and still to this day I do it. But now I do acoustic consults as well. And when people want to get serious about their home studios or other studios, you know, I can help them with that. You know, I've studied acoustics a little bit. It's like geometry for sound.
You know what? You're actually kind of a wizard with acoustics. Like, you really look at all the angles in a room. I love that. I love that about you, because that's like attention to detail. Like, you'll walk into a room, you'll immediately size like the bass traps, or you'll sign like what you'll kind of like measure up a room.
You know what I mean?
A lot of people don't do that enough.
You know, put the blankets here, put some diffusion here.
Yep.
You need to harden up this, soften up that. And all that's important.
Yeah.
Because those are the kind of records I do.
Yeah.
You know, I do mostly bands, and I get a lot of calls to do horn dates and orchestral stuff because I still know how to do it.
Real quick, our co-host just walked in. Say hello, Ben Wilkins.
Hello there.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
He snuck in. Like a phantom, Bob.
Yeah. Happy to be here, a little bit unpunctual today.
You know what? It all worked out.
It all worked out.
It all came together. So that's all that matters, you know?
Yeah, but getting back to that, I really think that's important to me. And that's what I mean when I say some people take home recording seriously and some people don't.
Yeah.
You know, some people, they just plug their guitar into their laptop, and I'm an engineer, and that's fine for
them. I'm sure that annoys the shit out of you.
Well, it does. And it doesn't, but it's where we're at.
Right. I mean, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I love when people know what
they're
doing.
I'd love to record your band all at once.
Man,
you know
let's
what
do
I mean?
It.
Just all at once.
I'm down.
You know,
I'm
let's
down.
Just go to a place and let's rehearse for like 10 days so that everybody knows everything. We can walk in and play it like a set.
I run a tight ship, Bob. Yeah, I crack the whip. But you know what's crazy, though? We rehearsed for this festival that we played.
Uh-huh.
We put a 12-piece band in a room about half the size of this room.
Yeah.
Half the size of this room. And it was just, it was tight. But it actually made us, like, tight as a band, too.
Leakage was your friend.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was super crazy.
Well, that's the kind of stuff that I do. I'm mostly known for... Look, I approach what I do is... I've come to think of it as... Look, I'm a cinematographer of sound.
Yeah.
Microphones are lenses. Mic prees are the body of the camera.
Yep,
you know,
totally.
And that's the way it works for me.
I've got so many questions for you. Okay, let's go way back.
Okay.
What got you into this business? What made you... What was the song or the thing, the catalyst that made you want to be a recording engineer?
I grew up... My dad ran a big family resort hotel in the Poconos. And a friend of his from Cornell went on to become marketing director for RCA out of New York. And what do you do with the rooms at a family hotel between Thanksgiving and Christmas? You sell them to businesses so they can have their end of the year convention.
Parties, yeah, yeah. Right.
That whole thing. Because so every year for like 10 years, we got the entire RCA catalog and all its subsidies. The guy gave us our first radio, then he gave us a stereo, then he gave us a two-track that I could sync
up. Oh, my God, that's
and
awesome.
I was like eight
How old
or
were
nine,
you when you got the two-track?
But maybe nine.
Oh, my
maybe
God.
Maybe eight or nine. And I had all these great records, you know, all the Elvis records and Frank Sinatra records and all this stuff.
Wild.
And plus, you know, look, I was way up on the side of a hill in a town of 57 people, and when there weren't guests at the hotel, it was the dead zone.
Yeah.
Believe me.
Yeah.
It was, so I really got into music. And then, like I mentioned before, I couldn't afford the stereo that I wanted, so I just bought it as a kit and built it. So by the time I was...
How old were you when you did that?
13, 14 maybe.
See, let me
and
tell you.
I started fooling around.
That ain't normal.
I started fooling around with guitars.
Yeah, but at 13 years old, I mean, you're putting together a stereo system. That's not like...
But look, it was paint by number.
Right.
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right,
and everything was marked and numbered, and it was a lot simpler than it is now.
And you were probably very goal-oriented. Ben,
yeah.
Have you ever been goal-oriented like that?
Goal-oriented like take things apart and put them back together?
Yeah.
Well, especially with mechanical things as a kid. I didn't grow up with a lot of tools. So I was always terrified that I would like take apart my skateboard and then not be able to get it back together and it wouldn't work. I did take a few things apart.
That happens.
I mean, modifications that weren't even written down just to make it work. You know what I mean? But it taught me a lot.
Right.
And then also there was live music at the hotel. I mean, they'd have jazz trios come out of New York. You know, which
any crazy players?
Not that I can remember. I was too young.
Right.
But one of my favorite things is just like dinner jazz music, just piano, bass, and drums.
Yeah,
there's just nothing like
that's
that.
That's like my favorite jazz.
Oscar
Peterson Trio.
That kind of stuff. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
I even like the modern day stuff, but I really like the old stuff.
They had country music dances too. You know what I mean? So there was that. And then there was also a movie theater. And the thing is in the summertime, they would rent one movie for the whole summer and play it every Wednesday because the crowd would turn over, right? And they, one summer it was Hatari, which was the movie with John Wayne where they caught all the animals for zoos. But Henry Mancini did the music, and it was really a real departure for him. And Al Schmidt was actually the engineer.
Wow.
And the music for that was very pioneering. It won a whole bunch of awards. But I saw the movie so many times that I stopped watching the picture and just started to listen to the music.
Wow.
And it had a huge influence on me.
You were like, how do they do that?
What I realized was how much emotion the music could bring out when it
sound
was
in
played,
general, really.
Was played to the picture.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? And
yep.
You listen without it, and it's just not the same.
People take that for granted.
They do.
I mean, sometimes I do. Even as a musician, when I'm watching a movie and I'm in it, you don't realize a lot of the emotion you're feeling is created from the music.
Well, but also, too, only people that do it realize how captivating the high is when you're playing with other people and it's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just nothing in the world like it.
I totally agree.
I'm a hack guitar player, but still, I do it. And I'll do it at 4th of July parties and stuff like that and, you know, play alongs and stuff. But all my friends are musicians.
We're going to talk more about you building guitars in a second. But first, okay, so you watched this movie. Henry Mancini did the music.
Right. It had a real impact.
And you had a two-track recording device.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, how am I going to do this?
Well...
What's the next step for Bob Biles?
Well, the next step was that I took individual guitar lessons. I was just tutored. You know what I mean? I went to a Catholic school and I tried to get music happening there, and that was just.
I bet they taught you a lot of folk.
Well,
they always teach folk in the beginning.
Yeah, but because it's easy. But there was a lot of good folk in my day because you know we're talking '60s.
Yeah.
You know, so it was happening then. But you know, I wanted to learn to play the Beatles, and that was.
No,
can't do that.
And that just makes you want to play more.
So, you know, I bought books with chords and taught myself a little bit. But then, you know, when I was a teenager, I went to a private tutor for a while. And then, you know, I played through high school. I went to prep school in Lake Placid, New York, because I wanted to ski. And unfortunately, I was the only musician in an all-jock school. But it kind of worked out because I played music and I had a different point of view, but I could ski. You know, I was a good skier because I grew up at a hotel that had a skier.
Yeah,
I've been doing it longer than I've been doing anything. I started skiing when I was maybe
still ski.
Yeah,
Did you go this season?
Not yet. I went year before last. I went to Mammoth, and then I went with my brother. They opened two new ski.
I'm a huge snowboarder, and I have not gone this year, and I go every year.
It's gotten
so
expensive.
I love that it's June, and we can still go.
I know. They're talking till the end of August this year at Mammoth.
I know, which is crazy.
At Mammoth. One year, I want to go to the 4th of July in Mammoth, you know, where the snow.
Maybe this is the year. Maybe yes. This is the year, Bob. We'll have to talk about that, because I'm down if you're down.
But that was one of the things they had at the hotel. They had a ski area. They had a lake, and we're talking 5,500 acres. That's like 4 miles square. It's big enough to have its own post office and zip code.
That's crazy.
You know.
And did you have access to studio gear? Like,
well,
level?
No. I mean, I had a crappy little unbalanced dynamic microphone. You know what I mean? But I learned to record. You know, I transfer records to tape, and then I learned how to edit. And this was all. And I would do it with scissors. Just the cut of my hand.
Splicing.
With Scotch tape. Literally with Scotch tape. And I would record sound effects and all that kind of stuff. And I would play DJ and talk in between. And then I would record myself on guitar and that kind of stuff.
So the fascination started early.
But the fascination was always equal with the equipment and the music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
A lot of people don't. I mean, I remember I wanted to record early on.
Yeah.
I didn't get my first four-track till I was maybe 19.
You have to understand, this is like 67, 66, 67. You know, I was just 10 in 65. So the similarities between, where do I go? Where do I teach this? I mean, really, what I should have done was go into film school, because it was the only real place at that time that taught.
That had studios?
That taught audio. Nobody taught audio.
Wow.
Luckily enough, so I figured, I went through prep school, and then I figured, well, I'll go to a really good, mass communications college. So I went to Emerson, which was a really good TV, radio.
In Boston, Massachusetts, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Down the street from Berkeley. And when I was there, there were great, great jazz and music venues. They were just great. They're not there anymore, but they were. So I figured, I'll learn this from radio. But the similarities between TV, radio, broadcasting
totally different.
In the 70s compared to now was just, I was lucky to maybe see a two-track and a microphone.
Wow. That's crazy.
You know,
Ben, you probably never even use a two-track.
You know, now you go to NBC and there's, the Tonight Show has got an SSL console.
Right.
What I mean?
Yeah.
So it's completely changed. When stereo TV came in, it completely changed. So I went to Emerson for a year, and then I didn't know what to do, and then I actually found out about this school in San Francisco called College for Recording Arts, which was like a two-year program about music, about audio, about electronics, a little bit of business and a little bit of law to keep us out of trouble. So, I went there. I worked as a waiter at a Holiday Inn and went to school at night and and went to school during the day.
So did that shape your hours of a work as a working engineer?
Yeah. I guess it prepared
me
for it. Yeah.
You're like, I'm getting into vampire mode.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
is how I'll do it.
Well, that's what it is. It's full blaster off, and sometimes it was, there were great. There was one studio that I worked at all the time, but it was like at 7 at night till 7 in the morning because we could get it half price.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter.
So was that the first time you were in like a serious recording studio in San Francisco?
No, yes, because the school, it was a very good recording studio.
And that must have been a great time to be in that area too, because you had a lot of great bands.
This was 76, I think.
So you had the Grateful Dead there, Santana, you had Joan Baez.
Journey.
That's right. Yeah, man.
Well, I went on to work with Steve Smith for 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, he lived in Nevada. I met him through Frank.
Now, you've done a lot of stuff with Frank Gambale. You just did some stuff with Kevin Eubanks. We're going to get to all of that. What was the first big artist that you worked with?
Believe it or not, Edwin Starr.
Huh.
He was the first big artist I worked with. And I was just an assistant engineer then.
And you just been doing
I was just wheels. Sitting in the back, filling out the track sheets.
Yep,
and,
yep.
One of my jobs was, one of the things they taught me in at College Recording Arts, we had a really good music teacher. And he said, look, one of the most important things as an engineer is to always know where you are on tape. So he taught me how to, break down the form of a song. And look, in those days, I was lucky enough, they were just started to put counters on tape machines.
Wow.
you know, because otherwise you'd mark the tape with grease pencil because you had no other way to find it.
Which is how Doug Messenger still does it.
Well, no, but seriously.
That's an engineer I've worked with.
So, you know, I learned how to, like, okay, every four bars I would make a number so that I always knew where I was.
Right.
So that I could, and then I could hand it to the engineer while he's doing something else. But I could always, you know, say, look, well, I want to sing here. Or get me a lyric sheet, and I'll number the lyric sheet.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? But it's like, go to the bridge. Okay, you're two bars away from the bridge. And when I said that, I knew I was there. And people started to rely on that because it would speed things up.
How would you dial that in? I mean,
if you had an old locator, but you could punch in a number.
Okay.
You could say, okay, go to 322.
Oh, and it would
locate to 322.
Oh.
Because
there was
a sensor. Yeah, there was a sensor.
Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's great.
And now it's like, you know, I can't tell you how many people I've showed in Pro Tools. It's like, look, dude, you should be working in beats and bars. Forget about time code.
Yep.
Just go to beats and bars.
I agree. I totally agree.
Come on, just bar. It's like star 132. You're there. You're two bars away from where the guy wants to punch.
I almost get, like, frustrated sometimes when engineers don't, like mark songs right away.
You either
A measure the okay verse one
right.
You know?
Either you make a list,
yeah.
or you make markers. To me, I'm just so used. I just make a list.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. But I'm doing something.
Yeah.
And or give me the lyric sheet, and I'm just going to write the bar numbers down.
I have
people
a
like
phrase.
You,
yeah.
people like you who are really good singers.
Yeah.
You don't need more than one line.
Nope.
Give me the line before, and then punch in.
You know what's also funny? I'm always just like, give me four beats.
Yeah.
So many people go, what meter are we? I'm like, just
dude, yeah.
That's all I need.
Yeah, well, that's something that I think. Oh, look, you don't have to be a musician, but you have to know music.
You have to. Yeah, you do.
You have to know music.
You at least have to know counting.
Well, no, you have to know what 4/4 time is. You know, hey, you have to know what 12/8 is. You have to know. Okay, look, you know, it's like it wasn't until years later that I realized the intro to Whipping Post was in 11.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. You know what I mean?
Dude, kudos
to Greg.
Kudos
to Greg.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
One of my favorite musicians.
And then, you know, 20 years later, I realized the intro to White Room was in 5, and the rest of the song was in 4.
Yeah.
But it got to the time. And look, when I'm working with Frank and Bali, who brings in Chick, who brings in Vinny, and stuff like that, those guys just want to play.
Yeah.
And I just got really good at punching and doing all that stuff.
Well, let's get into that a little bit. So Frank Cimbali, heavy hitter as far as musicians are
concerned. Yeah, he's got to be, I think, the best guitar player in the world. But, I mean, he's one.
Easy. Stevie Ray Vaughan's still up there.
Come on now.
I'm
just saying.
No, he's
fusion.
Definitely one of them.
One of the
best.
He's one of the best guitar players in the world. There's no question. And I met Frank. I was working a lot at a little studio in Silver Lake right down the street from Mad Hatter. Which is where Frank was based. With
that's Chick Corea's studio.
Chick
Corea's
studio. Well, Scientology studio.
Yeah. Well, no, I think he owns it.
He did own it, but he gave it to Scientology.
Oh.
Are they putting out a lot of good records?
No, all they do is books on tape.
Oh.
All they do is take old rock. That's all they do.
They should get Chick Corea to play some piano in the background.
Well, I'm sure they do something like that. But anyway.
That'll cost them.
Frank was doing his second solo album, and I guess either. The guy that he was that tracked it either got sick or they had a falling out. To this day, I still don't know. But they recommended me, and I came in and mixed his second record.
Hmm.
And I've worked with him ever since.
Crazy.
And that's like, it's 30 years this year.
Damn, that's crazy.
And I, you know, through him, you know, 10 years later, he got invited to be with Steve Smith in Vital Information, which is Tom Koster from. Santana. Tom Koster wrote Europa.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And Tom's an incredible keyboard player.
So let me ask you this. When Frank's doing a take, I mean, they're all dynamite. You know that you've had the tape over, especially if he's doing tapes.
Well, in the days of tape, well, you know, when you're doing a jazz record, you don't have to worry about vocals, so you got extra tracks.
Yes,
you know what I mean. So,
so you would just do another take?
Yeah, we just do another take. But I had to be ready.
Junk
for that.
Any good ones?
At some point you have to make a decision, or you have to comp.
Yes,
you know, or you have to comp.
Yep.
You know what I mean. And there was a lot of comping. I mean, but you know, but the other thing is, look. Frank's really organized. He writes all the charts for everybody. Everything's worked out. He rehearses. Look, I think one of the secrets to making a great record, okay, we have no money and it's a 9-piece horn band. Well, how can we make a record? Go rehearse every day for a week.
Yep.
Get your shit together. Get your stuff together.
No, you can say shit. It's okay.
Get your stuff together. Write it down.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in the studio and go, should we play this a half step? I don't want to hear any of that.
You know what was remarkable? I'd never actually worked. I'd worked with a 3-piece horn section. I'd never worked with a 5-piece horn section. These guys were so good that my saxophonist was singing the lines to them as they were playing them.
Right. Well,
in rehearsal, both in rehearsal and in the performance.
Yeah, but who knows more about harmony than
I know, but it's crazy because some of the lines that we were doing are not easy lines.
Well,
and they had them down so quick.
But
I was
that's they're so
scary.
Used to that.
Yes, but they're used to that. But it's just crazy. But the crazy thing is, there's a band playing, and then you hear this little. And they're like, I was just like, oh my god!
Well,
you know,
that's great.
I would have been like, ba 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 ba, like, hold on, let's stop. So it's kind of you're right. It's training the ear.
Part of the reason that I was with Frank for so long is because I can keep up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And nobody's ever got to wait for me.
Well, I want to play something off this Kevin Eubanks record. Let's play something first.
Okay, play.
And then we'll talk about it.
Okay, play Cubano Champ, which I believe is number 8.
You see that?
I got it off. I've got it up here.
Okay. All right,
let's
do that.
See if I practice my computer enough to make this go. Thank you.
dude that was slamming, jamming. Are you still with us, Ben?
I'm with
you. Yeah, see? That's why
I'm with you.
You just
got
to do all of it. Do the whole row. All right.
I'm on.
So, Bob, that was slamming. You actually played me this before it was mastered.
Yes.
Just as a listening.
Yeah.
Because I love music, and you know that I love music.
Yeah, I had just...
Like, check this out.
I had just completed it, and it was yet... I had finished it that week, and it was yet to be mastered.
You know what I love about it? It's so clean.
Well, thank you.
It's like, you know, everything is balanced. Everything feels like you're in the room.
Well, there's three songs in this record where, you know, I'd start mixing, and Kevin would go upstairs, you know, because he has a beautiful studio in his house. I mean, he took it seriously.
Wow.
He has one of those houses that's like three stories, and it's on the side of a hill, so you have a full half story downstairs. And he just blew that all out and built a real room.
That's the way to do it.
With an old Neve console, he's got one of the four custom Neve boards that were built for the Jackson Brothers. He's got Marlon Jackson's Neve.
That's crazy.
It's like a 32 input Neve, and it's only filled with 24. You
know? And ironically, like all those old Neve boards are like one of the only things in studios that actually appreciate all the time.
Oh,
like,
man, they're just fat and big and round. Yes, you know what I mean? I mean, you can get in trouble too, where everything's fat and big and round, so you got to know what you're doing. But look, the best EQ is no EQ. If you needed to get a bright microphone, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or get a dark microphone.
I like that.
No, seriously, look, like I said, this is cinematography. You know, put the right lens on.
Yeah.
Like, that's why ribbon mics are so popular for saxes and guitars.
Yep.
Because they don't hear anything above 10K.
Right.
Why go to the equalizer and do this?
When you don't need it.
When you can just put a mic there that does that for you. Also, too, look, there's a difference between the way Neve mic pre-sound. They're warm and fuzzy.
Yeah.
APIs are they have a little more mid-range edge, but they have a pristine top.
Yep.
And then you have ones that are like transformerless, like the Grace, the GMLs, and like the Millennials. There's no transformers there, so there's no color. But they capture the most transients, and if you put the right mic in them, you'll get the biggest picture.
Right.
They're very hi-fi.
Yeah.
You know, but I have to have them all because they're all right for certain things.
Yep.
You know,
and it's not about the gear; it's about knowing how to use it.
It is, look. I have a list of probably 1,000 microphones in my head, and this is what I'd like to use. If I can't use that, I've got 5 others that I can pick from.
Yeah,
you know. And well, look, here's the difference. You know, it's rare now that what kids learn in school, it's more about the technology than the music and the art.
Doesn't that suck? I know.
No, it's like
I get mad about it. I can't imagine how you feel about it.
I'm an engineer. I plug right into my laptop and play along with samples.
Yep.
Okay, great. Well, we got a 70-piece orchestra that we'd like to do on Monday. You'll get to look at the console for 10 minutes on Friday, and you get to take home an equipment sheet and set it all up. Are you ready for that? Well, I am.
Right. Yeah. But you've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, but the thing is I know that, and we should still teach that.
Yep,
I agree. And we don't.
I know.
And we don't.
Well, there's somewhere where the quality control starts to slip, and that's what drives me nuts.
Well, I also think that there's too many people out there, there's too many schools that are just trying to make a buck, not really teach real world what's going on.
I agree.
You know what I mean? The school that I went to was hard, and people flunked out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it was serious. You know.
Well, not only that, it gives you a taste of like, oh, this is maybe not what.
Well, it's serious. It's like, look, as far as the American Medical Association is concerned, being a recording engineer and doing orchestral things and TV and film and what I do, it's like second to air traffic controlling as far as like stress and attention to detail.
Yeah.
Because look, I'm trying to. You know, pay attention to the music while watching levels and going, oh, my God, I need this. You know what I mean?
Well, let's talk about that a little bit with this record. So this was not the first Kevin Eubanks record.
No, I've done 6 projects with Kevin, and we've five have been released. This is the 4th album I've done with Kevin, 3 with his group. Okay, and he likes to be known as the Kevin Eubanks Group, not just Kevin Eubanks.
Hey, what I like about him is, for those of you that don't know, Kevin Eubanks was the guitarist and kind of like the assistant music guy on the Jay Leno show. What would you call that?
He was a musical director, but he was also like, he kind of took...
He had some FaceTime.
He took Ed McMahon's place.
Yeah.
He was like... He was like
a hype man, but he
was
not
like Jay Leno's
man.
Sidekick. Let's say.
And we were talking about this earlier, but Branford Marsalis is one of my favorite musicians.
He's great.
He was the same position, and then he handed it off to Kevin. Kevin did it for I think he did it more than 8 years.
No, Kevin. He was on the show for 18 years.
Okay,
and
that's right.
He was on for 15 years. He was the music director.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
So.
And he's just like that band, and just him in general. Heavy hitters.
All of them.
Just like the baddest of the bad.
Yeah.
I want to say he went to Berkeley or he
did.
Went to, yeah, that's right.
He
yeah.
did. And he met Smitty there.
That's right.
The drummer.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just like one of those jazz musicians that you're just like, dude, you can play any bag, anytime.
But he can also play rock.
Thing.
But here's
yep.
what a lot of people don't know about Kevin. Is Kevin's just as good a piano player as he is.
Oh, my God. Really?
Honestly.
Don't tell me that, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he
plays bass and he plays a little bit of sax.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. But he's an incredible piano player.
And you're like, oh,
and
by
we
the
did
way,
a record.
He's an incredible singer on top of that.
We did a record with he and Stanley Jordan.
Wow.
And I said, well, look, you know, Kevin, I think it's about time the public heard you play piano.
Yeah.
Because, and it's like, you know, I don't want to just hear you and Stanley just playing guitar all the time. It might
right.
be nice for you can play piano and Stanley can play guitar. Then Stanley can play piano and you can play guitar. And he was really open to it, and he did it. Well, Stanley can tap and play piano.
Do you know Stanley Jordan?
No.
He's a badass like jazz guitarist. He does this tap thing.
He plays hammer-ons like this.
Okay.
And he's got like this sound that nobody really does. He's kind of like the Tony Levin of jazz guitar.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very
sticks.
Unique.
Yeah. He's got this unique tapping sound that
where he
does
can tap the string. It's like it's almost like
a piano.
If he was to put the guitar down on a flat surface and you watched him play like this.
Yeah,
right?
It's
okay,
wild.
But he's worked
it's
it
wild.
Out. He's worked it out this way.
That's
and
crazy.
And it's pretty crazy. And he does these things.
Yeah, it's wild. I've
it's
seen
like Jerry Douglas.
Who,
you know, he'll bend the strings behind the nut while he's playing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
When you see guys doing that, it's like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're like,
but it was the first time Kevin actually played on a record, and he was very grateful about that. You know, because and he's really good.
And was this all recorded to tape, or was it all to analog? Digital?
Actually, at first it was, when I first went there, he had Tascam DA-88s, which was like, you know, the Tascam version of an ADAT.
Yeah.
And they crashed.
Why would he have ADATs? That's crazy.
Because he doesn't like Pro Tools.
Hmm.
More when he doesn't. The thing with Kevin is like.
He's old school.
Well, he just likes to capture a performance.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing is, it's like we would. I talked him into the Elise's hard disk recorders after the Tascams crashed, mainly because the Elise's hard disk recorder is very underrated. It's one of the best sounding ones there is.
Hmm.
And, you know, you can put a hard drive in there and you can get 24 hours of 24 tracks at 24-bit 48K. So that we started.
We are not monkeying around here.
No, we started doing that. And the thing is, you know, we would just put it in record.
Right.
Because, you know, he would start rehearsing and sometimes the rehearsal would be the take. So you got to, that was something I learned really fast.
You have it all together.
Yeah, just have it together.
And are you dialing things in as, because with jazz, you know this, when you record jazz, it's like, the live
energy.
It's
more about knowing mic placement, man. Yeah. Look, I've been around long enough to know, okay, well, we're just going to start with the mic pre at like 11 o'clock, because I really don't know what's coming, but that's like halfway.
Do you ever ask him, like, play me your loudest, what are you going to play?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I always like to get that window.
Yeah, sometimes.
I know, okay, it's not.
You know, I have, the other guys will do that for me, you know what I mean? There was only one thing that one time a trumpet player just blew me out. So I had to.
I'm glad
sample,
you put out.
I had to sample it from somewhere else.
What were you saying?
I was saying that happened to me a lot of times. If you get that level too close to that, people are often just like, "Yeah, I'm going to play this loud," and then they always go louder.
Well, no. Once the red light goes on, it's completely different. Look, let's talk about drum sounds for a minute.
Yeah.
This idea of like, okay, give me the kick.
Right. Right.
Give me the snare. Whack, whack, whack.
You like to hear the whole kit.
Dude, just go play a groove.
Right.
Don't put the headphones on yet. Just go play a groove and play. Don't play toms, but play cymbals and everything. Look, the guy's playing for real now.
Yeah.
You can get
kick. I like that approach,
You can get
Bob.
Kick. You can get snare. Yeah. You can get hi-hats. You can get overheads, which is, to me, the most important part of it.
Right.
And look, here's the other thing. This thing about gating the drum set and all, drums is the whole picture.
Yeah.
It's not what, like, the kick drum sounds like in solo.
Yeah.
If
You're right.
Have a problem with leakage, I'll gate the send of the reverb. Thank you very much.
Right.
But I'm not going to gate the snare drum and gate the toms. Let's tune the damn things.
Right.
I've learned how to tune a drum.
I've learned a lot about mic placement over just doing records.
Yeah.
It's like, you're right.
And it's like, okay, great. So now you can get the headphones together for them with a little bit of reverb on it and say, okay, put your headphones on for me. And he'll go, wow, this sounds great. Instead of, otherwise, he's going to hear you EQing or doing all this stuff, and he's not going to like it.
Yep.
And look, if he just go plays a groove, I can get a great drum sound in 20 minutes.
Wow.
Okay, now let's hear the toms. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom. We're done. And
see,
I can get a really, really good...
Ben's like, damn, I got to redo all my...
I can get a really good drum sound in like half an hour. Because the guy's playing for real. And look, it's not about all these microphones individually. It's about what they sound like together.
Together.
But I'm assuming the kit's tuned really well.
Oh, yeah, but I've had to learn that, too. And believe
me... You tune drums yourself?
Oh, yeah. I learned from Jeff Ockletree, who was John Bonham's tech. And also I learned from Steve Smith, too. And when I went out on the road with Steve Smith... which I did on and off for like 15 years, I was drum tech too, as well as front of house mixer.
So you're in the booth, you're listening, or you're in the control room, you're listening, and you're like, I got to get that out.
Times where I will pull $20 out of my pocket and say, look, go buy a new snare drum head on me because this is never going to sound right.
Wow.
You need a new head, and I don't want to hear about it 3 weeks from now. Can we get that snare to sound good? You know, it's just not going to happen.
Right.
And the $20 is on me because I just don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is look, I can make.
I like you more and more.
I can make a good sounding kit sound fantastic.
Yeah,
I make a bad sounding kit maybe mediocre.
Well, let's get to another track on this record. What do you want to play next?
Let's see. Let's play Carnival number 4.
Number 4. You got that?
All right. Yes. Here's Kevin Eubanks' Carnival.
This is one of the ones we did in New York.
Ben, I like that intro. Do it again.
We're back with Kevin Eubanks' Carnival.
Probably Carnival, actually.
Thank you.
Excuse that little slap.
That wasn't in the recording, huh?
The slap was my little addition to the amazing Carnival.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, for both tracks, how many takes for each?
Because I know they're like so usually tight. Usually with Kevin, I would say no more than two or three.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he just feels a vibe and just gets it, and he's like, that's it.
Yeah, well, hey, man, a lot of this stuff is, he goes out and hones it on the road.
Yeah.
And then he comes back, and he's ready to record.
Is he playing in L.A. anytime soon? I would love to see him.
He's in Philadelphia right now. I mean, he's back home. He needs to be.
And you prefer being in the studio rather than doing live sound, too?
Well, I'm getting a little old for live, but I love both. There's something about live, though, you know, when I feel they're both important. Look, you know.
I could have used you for live this weekend at the Royal Seco, trust me.
You know, there's something about live in a great venue, but there's so many venues that are just awful. But when you get to a really nice venue where it's a great sound system and you're in a great mix position, you're not off to the side in a closet like at Catalina's, which is just like one of the worst in the world.
Yeah, yeah. There's some rooms you're just like, how would you not dial this in? It's crazy.
Well, that's thank God we have digital consoles now with iPads, so you can walk down and at least do it.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just have to trust yourself. I mean, I've been in situations where I've lost my monitors.
Wow.
You know, so I just have to fly with it and watch the meters.
I did a gig once with one of Prince's live guys, and he said, I said, oh, so how many sound crew does he have? He said, yeah, for mixing? I said, yeah. I said, I do front of house and I do monitors.
You're right.
And I'm like, wait, he doesn't have like a monitor guy in a front? He's like, no, he wants one guy to yell at.
Wow.
So he just runs back and forth.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
That's a little
crazy.
Know,
so, but you know what?
That's more patience than I have.
I agree. Dude, the record sounds incredible, like the sounds and the tones. Like, what did you spend the most time doing post-recording for mixing? Like, I mean, I know you said
probably
not EQing, but balancing, would you say?
Yeah. Look, you can turn a pan pot. You can pan an instrument to a point where all of a sudden it becomes clear as a bell.
Right.
There's so many records these days. Everything's stereo track, so everything's hard left and right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Listen, 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock for a mono tracks, that's really important.
Right.
When you put tracks like this up here, that's the area that makes things start to sound like it's going over your head.
Yeah.
You know, and listen, this 2 degrees on a pan pot is when you find that place, all of a sudden it's like, where can I put the shaker? I got the hi-hat over here, and it's like, oh, and all of a sudden it'll become clear as a bell.
Hmm.
And the other thing you have to understand when I'm mixing is I would never put like hi-hat and shaker on the same side.
Right.
They have to be opposite.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it's like...
But sometimes the Beatles would do that.
I know, but...
But they didn't have that many tracks.
But there was mono.
Yeah.
So
true. When they did go stereo, they were panning really extreme.
Well, it was all vocals on one side, band on the other. You know what I mean?
And those records still sound so epic.
But there was something about that. But it was all tube consoles and tape. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And you know, 1-inch 8-track.
I want to ask you like a geeky question.
Okay.
What's your favorite studio that you've worked in?
Capitol, probably.
Mm.
Capitol.
A room?
A and B. And then Village, I really liked. And then there's a studio around.
Which room in the Village?
I like the one in the front that's like the big hallway.
That's the one on the bottom floor. I think that's T1 Burnett's room.
Yeah, I like that room.
Hmm.
It's only got one booth in a really big room with high ceilings. But look, I did a lot of work at Bones Howe for years.
Yeah.
Bones did Mamas and the Papas and... He taught me one thing. He said, look, you got to learn that leakage is your friend. Don't try and get rid of it. Just try to keep it down to like 30%.
Oh, you give me chills, man.
Keep it to 30% or less.
Hmm.
And it becomes your friend. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it really does.
It's like taming it, really.
No. When everything's leaking into everything a little bit, it just makes the sound of the record so much bigger.
Yeah.
It really does because it's in everybody's in everything.
You know,
but that's when placement becomes really important.
Yeah.
But believe me, you can take two microphones and you can set them 180 degrees like this and have one singer on here, one singer on here. You wouldn't believe how little leakage there actually is.
Wow.
You know,
well, it depends on the mic.
Well, yeah, but
too.
If you've got two cardioid, good cardioid, yeah. like 67s or 87s or something like that, you'd be surprised how much clarity there is. But also, when I mic a drum kit, I see this happen all the time. It's like, guys, you know, why don't you just move the tom mics just away from the, like away from the rest of the kit? Take your floor tom and just angle it a little bit away from the rest of the kit.
Yeah.
You won't pick up the kick drum. You won't. And the hi-hat. Why don't you point the hi-hat microphone away from the snare drum? So that it's only seeing the hi-hat.
Yeah, I also learned this thing with some of the overhead miking, or just the room mics. Like from Doug Messenger, a lot of people put room mics really high. And he's like, you get a lot of cymbal noise that way. And he's like,
put them in front of the kit.
Yeah, put them in front of the kit and put them low.
And if it's a small room, just use one in Omni. Because you don't have the... the room isn't big enough.
Dude, I could geek out. Bob, I could geek out with you.
Well, I just did
you
this
and I
with
just
Adam.
Need to go, we need to do like a book tour, man.
I just did this with Adam. And okay,
yeah.
Years and years
later. And he can geek out too, man.
Oh,
he,
yeah. Oh, yeah. But I've also... I do something different, too. I've come to use... I put my overheads on a stereo bar like this, right over the drummer's head, and so I don't have I never have a phase problem because, and also I'm capturing what the drummer's hearing where he's at.
Right.
You know, I'm talking about like right here.
Yeah.
And I use one stand usually from behind the floor tom. And I just use one stand, and I'll put C12As there, or 67s, or, hey, the Shure KSM32, I think, is the best cheap microphone out there these days. It'll beat all the other ones. The Audio-Technica mic, there's a new line of Audio-Technicas that are just amazing. The ones.
What about the old, like, telephone? Like, my favorite
vocal mic. No, 251.
251,
nothing will beat it. Nothing will touch it.
I'm trying to buy a 251, but I'd have to, like, mortgage my house and sell my car.
No, let me just say this. They started remaking those about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But I know the story of this because I know Dan Alexander. You know, Dan Alexander, he's been brokering gear for 30 years, long before other people started doing it. And he was a part of the Rockets with Eddie Money before Eddie Money became Eddie Money. But the story is Telefunken USA wanted to recreate the 251. And when the wall came down, because Telefunken was on the other side of the wall, they went back to Germany and they did a lot of research and they went back and found new old stock on everything.
Wow.
Look, you can recreate that stuff, but if you don't get the same wire that it was made with, the copper is not going to come close.
Or the tubes.
Yep. So they found all this stuff just sitting on shelves.
Yeah.
And they were able to, like, recreate it by rebuilding it to the exact same specification with the exact same parts.
And you think it sounds as good?
You know, when I was at the AES show with Dan, I couldn't tell. And I said, Dan, I can't tell. And he looked at me and said, I can't either.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So
I've the last four records I've done have all been on Telefunken 251s.
The Telefunken 251.
So I'd love to do I'd
the
love
M49
the
and the U67. Those are like...
Yeah,
and the
U67s are great.
And my favorite microphone is probably the C12A, which is the original two.
I don't know that.
The original Philips two.
What? Original I'm saying that. Yeah, that's
C12
great.
One?
C12A, which is the tube version of a 414.
Wow.
Okay, it looks just like a 414, except it's got a bigger wire coming out of the bottom and its own power supply. And these are microphones that are like flat as can be until they get about 8K, and then they just go like this.
They soar.
And then it just they go up to about 15K.
There's something about using
mics like that for cymbals or piano or like, you know, as room mics on an orchestral date.
I mean,
you know, all that stuff's important.
Crazy.
You know.
Well, let's play something else. We may not be able to play the whole thing.
Okay,
but
play, I guess, number three, which is Poet.
You got Poet on there?
I got it on there. All queued up and ready to go.
All right. Thank you. Nice fade. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Ben Wilkins, thanks for filling in as co-host tonight, man.
Happy to do it. Happy to do it.
It was a surprise. Bob Biles, too.
Thank you.
Where can people find you real quick if they want to ask you to record the records or mix?
rbilesdials@gmail.com. And
spell it out because people are dumb.
Okay, so it's basically it's like a knobs and dials on a console. So it's RBILESDIALS, all lowercase, all one word, rbilesdials@gmail.com.
Bob, you've been an amazing guest. I want to have you back.
Thank you, man.
And absolutely. Then we just shook hands for those listening.
You can always use my cell phone, 213-503-0637.
That's the two best ways. If you get some, like, you know, Hungarian
whatever,
prostitutes.
As long as it's work.
You know,
I love it.
As long as it's work.
That is the question. On behalf of Ben and Bob, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. We're taking the 4th of July weekend off, but we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. And just play the fade out, Ben.
Thanks
play
for
the
having
fade
me.
Out,
play
buddy.
The fade out.